Welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, owner of the company Horns of Odin. As always, before the episode, I do have to shout out Patreon. I know you're probably sick of hearing it by now, but it is literally how we keep the lights on. Without the Patreon, there couldn't be a podcast. So if you do get a chance, please pop over to Patreon.com/Nordic Mythology Podcast. Works out at about 10p a day, £3 a month, or it starts from £3 a month. And there's a bunch of cool cool bonus material you get on there. So you get a Q&A episode every week with our guest that's recorded after the main show. It's basically just an extension of the main show. So if you like a particular episode, there will be some sort of extension on there. And usually the patrons ask a lot of questions that maybe me or Margreth miss. And they tend to be a lot of fun. And on top of that, there's a couple of story time episodes we do every month and our creator episode. So honestly, just go and have a look on the Patreon. It's well worth it. And you get the whole back catalog all the way back from when we started. So there's years of material at this point. And obviously not everybody can support financially. So even just a like, share, comment, you know, play with the algorithm, you know, we have to try and do that. And then a review wherever you listen to your podcast is also very beneficial. It helps new people find the podcast. So yeah, let's get into today's show. I'm looking forward to this one. So as always, Margreth, I think you're a regular enough now.
We've reached that point, haven't we?
Yeah, as always, I'm joined by Margreth Havgar. Margreth, you can introduce our guest today.
Yeah, we're joined by Mighty on the Moon, who is the head of the archaeology department at the Museum of Cultural History. She's also an archaeologist and coincidentally my boss, and I'm very excited to have her here today. Hi, Mighty on the Moon, how are you?
I'm all right. It's very lovely to be here today. I don't think I'll be wearing my boss hat. I'll be the silly academic me today, which is
yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love that. Go ahead, Dan.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, do you want to just tell us shortly a bit about like your interests and what you've done kind of in the archaeological side.
Absolutely. Right. So I normally start with saying that I'm a terrible archaeologist because I've not actually done much field work since 2005, at which point I worked in Britain, contract archaeology. But then slowly worked my way back into academia through the roles of gender archaeology. Main interest ended up being the Viking Age. That's fun. Although I have to be quite honest and say that it could have been any period. It just so happens that the Vikings are really easy to talk about from a gendered perspective. So, and also gender is here a euphemism for feminism. So I do feminist Viking Age studies, which is fairly niche. On top of that, I also tend to look at mortuary material for the main empirical basis. And I've dabbled in landscapes. And I've also dabbled in human sacrifice. So a fairly varied portfolio. And but as I was saying earlier on, anything that I do dabble in does tend to come back to being about gender.
Mm-hmm. So is that what your focus or interest always was? You said it could have been any topic.
It could have been anything. I did my undergrad in Edinburgh many years ago, and I did part of my master course, I was a credit in gender archaeology. And I knew that was something that I wanted to carry on with. But then, you know, academia is fairly, it's expensive in the UK. Mm-hmm. So I waited until we moved back to Norway until I tried to make a go of it. And at that point, it's like, I don't know what to study. Because obviously my focus when I was doing my undergrad was sort of Celtic Iron Age and that kind of thing. But there's not a lot of market for that in Norwegian universities. So I'm probably digging my own grave very swiftly here, but I basically cast around and went, you know what, the Vikings, they're pretty awesome. I'll do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a feeling that a lot of us who deal with the Viking Age ended up with the Viking Age through some sort of similar path.
They're just there, aren't they? It's available and quite easy.
It is quite easy.
Yeah. And fun.
Just for anybody listening, Marianne is Norwegian. She just has the most convincing British accent and completely fooled me before the show. So that kind of leads into my next question is, was there not... So I found this week I got into a little bit of a discussion online about somebody was suggesting basically that if you're Scandinavian, you're kind of automatically are interested in the Viking Age, and it's just this thing that is there, and like all it was the argument, it wasn't really an argument, but the talk was that almost as if like any Scandinavian automatically had some sort of one-up starting point on everybody else when it came to the Viking Age, just for because they were Scandinavian. And my point was like, nah, from my personal experience, that's not the case. And that's why I was wondering, with you being Norwegian, whether you led to the Viking Age, because it's like, oh, that's kind of like my history rather than maybe the Roman period or the Greek.
Do you know what's interesting? No, I don't think that was part of it, but it certainly is a point that, you know, if you any Scandinavian will have a relationship with the Viking Age, because a lot of our history books, for instance, in the school system, they start with the Viking Age, so we sort of taught it as part of our history. And that's a whole different thing that you could, you know, obviously talk about the nationalistic aspects of the Viking Age. But no, by the time I moved back to Britain, I'd spent 8 years in the UK. And I have to say, the Vikings were not part of my sort of any idea of identity or any sort of national connections with it at all. To be quite honest, one of the main reasons why I chose it was because I was interested in landscapes, burials, and women, and the Vikings did those really well. That connection with burial monuments in the landscape, and also being the graves being fairly back then, I would have said clearly gendered. I have now changed my views of that quite considerably, but I suppose that's an academic journey for you. So it was more that than anything else, but I think there certainly is something in that Scandinavians will automatically have a relationship with the Viking Age, and many people will have it as part of their sort of collective national identity.
Okay, so you said that the academic journey, like, it's changed. In what way?
Oh.
How's that kind of the transition from?
Right, so I started out wanting to look at women's roles in as they're depicted in the archaeological material, as compared to the story we're told about women's roles in many of the stories of the Viking Age, which, as I'm sure many people know, frankly, just don't measure up, because we're told all these things about how gender roles were enforced in the Viking Age, and then the archaeological material tells us something quite different if we care to look at it. So that was sort of the start of it. And when I was doing my master's at the University of Oslo a few years back, it was quite, actually, it's a very long time ago now, it's 14 years. I was using gender indicators on my material. And I carried on doing that when I started doing my PhD as well. So in my PhD, my database, for instance, is split into male, female, and indeterminate graves. And that's obviously convenient when you're trying to talk about gender and how it configures in the burial record. And it does configure in the burial record. But what I came to realize as I was doing my PhD is that actually most of the graves aren't gendered at all, and we don't talk about them. So that's where I've ended up being really interested, is that we have this idea of the Viking Age as a place where, you know, men had beards and axes and women had oval brooches and long gowns. And that is true, but it's only part of the story, because that's only a very, well, it's not the majority of the burial material. The majority of the burial material doesn't clearly communicate gender at all. So that's sort of where I ended up being really quite fascinated by the fact that, you know, if you go to a museum or you read a book or you look at a reconstruction drawing, you will see men with beards and axes and women with these special types of gowns. Whereas the vast majority of people weren't buried like that at all, and we don't have that as part of our analytical, it doesn't enter into the analytical material that we base our stories on. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I think I'm probably quite guilty of that, 'cause I think when I go to a museum and I see a skeleton, I just automatically go, oh, he's probably a man. And I don't know whether is that me because I am a man, or is that me just being a sexist pig.
Neither. It's you
I
being
think
taught by
you're the problem,
cultural
Dan.
institutions. Yeah.
Because
Just
I
you.
don't mean to
That's
do
it.
it.
We solved it.
I don't mean to. It's a subconscious thing.
Yeah, no, but it isn't. It's interesting you should say that, because that's part of the problem that we have, is obviously we expect the standard which we live by is that people should be men, and if they aren't, then they're slightly problematic because they're women. But at least we know where they fit, and if they aren't clearly women or men, then it becomes a massive problem, especially when it comes to narrating the past.
Okay. How easy is it to tell archaeologically speaking, like whether it's male, female, or gender in general? Because
That is such a good question, Dan, and that is such a complicated question.
yes,
Please
tell
go
them why
ahead
not.
and let them know.
Yes, 3 hours later, you'll all be crying for me to stop. No, right. So it is very, very complicated. First of all, you need to decide what country you're in. If you're in Norway, which I am, you don't have the skeletal material, so that means that you're reduced to deducing gender from grave goods,
Right.
and that means that
Is
you're
that
back.
sorry, just like a little, is that because of the ground
Yeah.
the skeletal just doesn't survive?
Soil conditions are just really
Okay.
terrible for skeletal preservation in Norway. Although, really interestingly, it's a lot better up north, where you do get a fair few preserved skeletons. But down south, where we're based, Margrethe and I, there's very little skeletal material. You do get the odd one, like the Osberg skeletons and Gokstad, but that's because they were buried in mounds of clay, which basically preserves anything. So yes, there isn't a lot. Also, a lot of the graves are cremated, and osteologically sexing cremations, I know technically it can be done, but it's not easy.
Okay.
So that's your first problem. So in Norway, most graves that you hear about from the Viking Age will be what we used to call, and I still think we do to an extent, call archaeologically gendered, which means that you look at the things that the person is buried with, and then you decide what it is from there. Now, fun fact is that the way that we gender burials from the Viking Age, i.e. by saying that weapons means it's a man and jewelry means it's a woman, is a method that hails back to the 1830s in Germany, where it was first written down. And the justification they gave for thinking that weapons should be buried with men and jewelry with women is that that was very appropriate in 1830s, and we still use it. So, yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. In other countries like Denmark, you do get a lot more skeletal material. But what you get less of is the grave goods. So there's this massive study from 1984, which we still use as a reference guide to gendering Norwegian graves. And in that, it is perfectly true that where there is gender-specific grave goods, such as jewelry and weapons, they do correlate to an osteologically sexed body of the expected gender. But, and here comes the big but, and this is what I was talking about earlier when what I discovered when I was doing my PhD, out of 380 odd skeletons, 20 of them correlate with grave goods and skeletons, because most of them only have like a knife and it's not gender specific. So we've
A
made a whole
really
story of
low number. Okay.
it's a really, really low number. It's less than 10% of burials that conform to female bodies buried with jewelry and male bodies buried with swords. So you have this whole.
On a quick little side note, because I'm a pain for that, I'm sorry. How many, when it comes to like burials that we find, how many would conform to being, say, a warrior? Because I think this is the idea that everyone has this idea that you find a burial, it's a warrior. And I'd love to know the percentage of like how many just general burials we find.
I can't give you the number of warriors found. In one of the main problems that we have in Norway is that we don't have a national database of all our burial material, at least not one that's searchable and easily accessible. A rough estimate of the number of Viking Age burials known would be about 8 to 9,000, but this is based on guesstimates, basically, which isn't all that accurate. So, and out of those, the percentages buried with specific types of goods, I honestly, I don't know. I wish I did.
Okay, that's a fair answer. I'd rather always rather that answer than make one up. It's just one of those things
That's
that I
not.
kind of I wondered whether it's a lot or not many
No, it's not.
or.
It's not a lot. I mean, and if you're talking about, you'd need to qualify what a warrior is as well. So, what would a warrior be buried with?
Okay.
What would it be? A sword and a spear and an axe and a shield? Because in that case, not a lot at all. Would an axe be enough? In that case, an awful lot. But if you say an
Okay.
axe is enough, then you've got a gender problem because a lot of women are buried with axes. So that goes against most of the traditional stories as well. So there's a lot of levels that you need to decide to get to that kind of number.
Yeah, so if you have this like such certainly I find like a fascination amongst like that shield maiden, strong female figure. That's what people most people I would say as like a lay person, they when they think of the Vikings, you think of like strong female characters. So if that exists within all of this, how come we have this huge leaning towards graves just automatically being sexed as male if found with any sort of weaponry?
That's again, these are very good questions, and they're quite complicated. There might be an interest in popular culture with women and weapons in the Viking Age. What we have seen, with the advent of the BJ581 and Bidka is that academically there is not much interest in women with weapons. In fact, it causes many, many, many strong feelings.
Okay.
And that in itself is very interesting. So I suppose it's because when you're an academic and you devote your life to the Viking Age, you do end up with feelings of ownership to that period. And then when empirical data comes up that doesn't necessarily flatter your version of the Viking Age, it might be difficult to deal with. So I think there is.
I would say I was about to ask that whether do you think that plays a part that almost we live in this time that the whole world feels like a kinder box ready to just ignite at the minute. And whether that played into it of putting something out that could be seen as quite controversial, whether it would kind of, I don't know, be received well, or do people maybe just avoid it because it's easier at a, if that even plays into it?
No, I'm not. I mean, yeah, it probably does on some level because knowledge is never produced in a vacuum, and we are shaped by the times that we live in many ways. And obviously, the Bidker debate is very much a product of its particular time, positioning in space and time. I don't know. I do find it interesting that in sort of amongst the general public, there is much more willingness to accept different stories of the past than there are in some corners of academia. But then I know also, and that's full disclosure, that many people find me difficult because I don't believe in a past. I think we always create the past and the present, and that the stories we tell of the past are the stories that we choose because they flatter our present or they tell us who we want to be. So I just, I suppose I'm the worst kind of relativist in the sense that, I just don't believe there is a Viking Age that isn't created by us in the here and now, and it reflects us more than
I
it reflects
mean,
the
I
Vikings.
personally just want to say, preach.
Yeah,
I
it's not
am
that.
very much on board with this, and especially also like the fact that, there likely isn't a objective Viking Age
Right.
past, even if we could come to some sort of interpretation of what that was like. There would be as many types of Viking ages as there were people and lived experiences in the Viking Age.
Exactly. And then even if you were to get like those hundreds of thousands of different voices, you would still have to understand them. So you would still have to put them into your own frames of reference. So the idea of a story of the past is, I think, completely fictional.
Do you, I often I love when somebody says something that I've never thought about, and then it makes me instantly go, I know I agree with that because yeah, everything is looking back through our lens and our
Yeah.
experiences, I guess. And also, I've always been very skeptical of when you're trying to boil down, 300-ish years into like one group of like people that cover a huge geographical location. It's like, everybody's struggling with different things all over, and to kind of put that all down into one thing seems very basic. I know times probably don't change as quickly back then as they do today, but if you look at it, just in my lifetime, the things that have changed in just what's socially acceptable from when I was, so I'm 35, so I think I've grown up in a time that's seen what one thing that you can say and is very accepted when I was a kid that is just wildly not accepted now. And I think just in my lifetime, from being at school to now, there's a lot of things that have just changed completely, and what is socially acceptable. So just in those 10 years, if you then put that into across, how the hundreds of years of the Viking Age, it must have changed drastically what you not necessarily what you can and can't say, but just the whole cultural aspect must have been wildly different.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, so when I try and describe the working age in a few words, which is obviously not easy, but I always try and say that it's a time in transition where everything was changing. So the start of the Viking Age, around about 750, has got so little to do with the end. Trying to talk about it as, a time when people thought and felt the same things, I don't think that works at all. And also, I mean, who are people? Can you compare an elite, wealthy, free person to somebody who's enslaved? I mean, you just can't. The range of social experiences is so diverse.
And I think we often forget that they're people, they have
Yes.
personalities,
Yes.
and what I do, in my house compared to like maybe my neighbor, not that I do anything weird in my house. That
Yeah.
sounded really, that sounded really
Really do
weird,
want to know now. What do you do in your
I
house?
know that's not, I didn't mean that to come across
Do
quite like
tell,
that.
Dan. Please share.
But what I mean is what I do to like my neighbor or like somebody down the road, we're different people. We enjoy different things. We have different hobbies. And that would be not much different. People enjoy different things. We're all human with our own thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
But we kind of just boil it down to a person or a role, I guess. And
Yeah, roles is what we talk an awful lot about archaeologically. What social role did this person play? And then we decide they had one, and then we're done, and we're very pleased with that. It's like, yes, but in the course of the day, I go through, I don't know how many different social roles I enact. Mother, academic, boss, partner, owner, because I have a dog. These are all social roles that I flit through in the space of an hour. And they're just sort of the outwards one. It's very complicated stuff.
Okay, back to gender in the Viking Age. So okay, so we stick with this kind of shield maiden figure, I guess, seeing as we were there. How accurate do you think that model is? Because it is, and on the back of that, why do you think there is such a fascination with it in modern times? Of because I'm trying to make the questions more simple without them being too broad, but then I keep piggybacking on the back of it because something else comes to mind. Because I feel like there is this really romanticized viewpoint of the Viking Age of how women were equal and everything was just very la-di-da and nice for women, and it is this kind of image that I think the everyday person has of like the Viking Age was just better than any other time for women.
Can I
Wherever you think is best to
interject?
start.
Can I interject there
Of
and be a
course.
real dick and ask another question that we can start with before you get there? Because I'm really curious about, I mean, I've read a lot of your work on this, so I do kind of know, but at the same time, I'm also really interested just to hear your thoughts on when we say man and woman today, we have a very specific thing that that means. And we do know that most likely fairly similar words were used at the time. But okay, I'm gonna be a real douche here and frame it in a weird way, but like, do you think that the word man now means is necessarily directly transferable to what man or woman meant back then? And then we can go back to Shield Maidens, because I'm really interested to get your pick on that.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad you asked that. No, I think that's again a complete utter
You're
simplification of
such a
something.
suck-up, Margaret.
No, but we've had this
I'm
conversation so many
joking.
times. So
I'm joking.
this ends up being more your territory than mine, but I think in today's society we are body obsessed. So when you say man, you think dick, and when you say woman, you think a womb on two legs. And that is just how we are conditioned, because our understanding of sex is so rooted in this idea of biology that we can't really see any other way of being. And to us, to have a gendered identity that isn't based in our genitalia seems very, very alien. And obviously that's now changing, which is brilliant, and we're moving towards a more interesting society, which is fantastic, but it still applies to the past. So when we describe ways of being gendered in the past, we still equate them to bodies. And so this is where you get up on thin ice, because then people are like, yeah, but are you saying they didn't have bodies in the past? I'm like, no, I'm not saying they didn't have bodies in the past. Obviously, they have bodies in the past, but I don't think that they rooted their identities in their bodies in the same way that we do, and especially not the Viking Age. And this is where I go into your territory, Margrethe, because, sexed gender, no, sorry, dressed gender and body gender can be two widely different things. And I think that's something that we see in the Viking Age, is that gender doesn't necessarily equate to bodies. Now, I do think that they knew and recognized male and female bodies, but I don't think that your male and female gender had to correlate with that. Are you
I'm
not
just
loving that?
no, it's not that I'm not loving it. I'm just trying to
I think Dan is just, he's just updating the software in his head. Because I do think that that's something that's so ingrained in us today. And I think that that's, I'm going to be very generalistic here, because there are obviously, exceptions to the rule. But I think that's one part of the development of archaeology as a field specifically. That's very unfortunate that we're so rooted in this biological version of what gender is, and also just not kind of taking having any space for the divergences that do appear biologically between
Oh,
the
I think
sexes.
so. Our understanding, archaeological sex is basically based on a 1950s utopia where there were just men and women, and the women wore dresses and the men, were men. And it doesn't really seem like the categories we use have updated in the time that has passed since, which is wildly unfortunate. But then also, Dan was saying earlier how when we were growing up, because I'm older than you, so I guess I can probably counter your stories with language that we used, which were absolutely appropriate in the 90s, that it's now absolutely just, so horrific. But it's not that long ago since we got the third box to tick on forms, for instance. So, the
I
first
remember
thing
that.
you do to identify yourself is, are you a man or a woman? When I was pregnant with my son, the first question anybody asked me would be like, is it a boy or a girl? I'd be like, well, it's a baby, and I hope it's human. And the list goes on. Yeah, he was. He's fine. Not a cat would have been a disaster. Anyway, sorry. Point being, we still think identity is dictated by our bodies. We can't stop thinking that way. But this is not about the Viking. Well, it is about the Viking Age, because it's about our stories of the Viking Age, which tends again to rely on our stories of ourselves. So where were we?
And then kind of like basing off of that, then we can get into the whole Shield Maiden thing.
Shield Maidens. Yes.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I have I think where
Oh, you're okay. I'm sorry.
I
Were you catching up just now?
I've been processing. Okay, so what do you think the focus was on if it wasn't on their bodies? What would they kind of identify with, if that's the right word? Would it be like their job role, or Yeah, how would that?
Yeah, no, so I think bodies did play a part, obviously, because of, reproduction and all of that. But I think social status was more important than gender. But also your family situation. So, we have many sources that testify to that if a household only had daughters, then one of those daughters could take on a more male role. And that's fairly widely testified to. We also know that in many circumstances, women could act in more typically male roles, and that doesn't seem to have been very rare. In fact, it seems to have been very common. So it does seem like circumstance and social status, opportunity, family, like those kind of things would dictate quite a lot of who you could be. And then I also think, I do think that they had male and female ways of being, but I think that you could transgress that regardless of body if you had sort of the social status and the opportunities behind you.
You said if a family only had daughters, then the daughter could then would that then not lean into that there is some sort of
There is a concept
gender
of gender.
hierarchy, I guess?
No, but there is a gender hierarchy, and I think that's fairly widely recognised. What I don't think is that it's static, and I don't think that it's biologically determined in the same way. So I think there are, again, I think there were ways of being gendered. I don't think they were rooted in bodies in the same way that they are for us.
I mean, there's this really interesting quote, and this is very unprofessional of me because I don't have the source right in front of me and I don't remember exactly what saga it's from. And again, sagas are problematic but also useful, getting that all the out of the way. But there is a line somewhere, and I'm gonna use this myself, so I need to find it again. But there is a quote from somewhere that says something along the lines of, and please correct me if I'm misremembering this, Mariana, if you know what I'm talking about. It says something along the lines of, I'd rather have a daughter who is a son than a son who is dishonorable or something like that.
Oh yeah, no,
And
that just rang a bell.
even that, I haven't had the time to like dive into this, but then I'm like, oh, so now we're even just talking about the concept of pronouns.
That's really interesting.
And that entails a whole different thing. So son, like just playing off that, son doesn't necessarily equate dick.
Yeah,
Like,
no, it doesn't. It doesn't, and that's the thing that I think we see it in the archaeological material as well. So yes. There are graves where there are female bodies buried with, full jewelry and textile equipment. And yes, there are male burials that are buried with swords and shields and spurs, spears, and the whole package. But they're only a very small percentage of what we actually have. Most of them share a lot of grave goods. They are buried in similar ways, following the same rituals, buried under the same kind of monuments. It doesn't seem to be as strictly gendered as those few graves would lead us to believe, and it doesn't seem to be as strictly gendered as the traditional narratives would have us believe.
I'm with you. I guess I'm trying to play somewhat devil's advocate, so don't hold me to
Oh,
any of
please
this.
do. No, that's fine.
If we have, you, I know you say we there's only so many of these graves that we can accurately sex, but if it leans to X amount is the ones with the weapons tends to be men, and then the X amount is the ones with the textiles and jewelry tends to be women. Would it not be kind of right to assume that out of the ones that we found and managed to sex, that would then kind of move forward? Because obviously you only find a very small percentage of what it was actually buried. So would it not be right to use them to then kind of kind of as a ratio to go, okay, with this kind of percentage, and would that be
Problematic.
problematic? Why was I putting an L in there? What problematic was that? Would that be pro would that
Not?
be problematic?
No, I don't think so. But
Because
we need to
depending on
talk
what you
about.
found.
No, I don't think it is problematic. I don't think so, it was so at all. But I think you need to talk about the other graves as well. That's what we tend not to do. So we're like, in the Viking Age, we have men, we have women. And you're like, yes, but And the so when I was doing my thesis, it was only a small sample. It was 218 graves. 25% of them couldn't be gendered. That's 25%. 25% of people being buried without gender markers. And so you end up going, why are we talking about them? Why are we only talking about the ones who conform? And out of those graves, even though
And this was this these were graves without any skeletal material that
without
just
any
had
skeletal material,
objects.
yes,
Yeah.
just objects. So even if you were to you look at just the gendered graves, if you disregarded the swords and the brooches, they still had an awful lot in common, more in common than they have apart. So they were buried with very much the same kind of assemblage, and then maybe a spear or a brooch thrown in on top. And yet we choose to talk only about that spear and that brooch, and we disregard all the other material that could tell us that actually these social roles are a lot more complex. Yes, also no osteological material in that sample, which leads to this hilarious catch-22 where you read site reports that goes, out of these 22 graves, there were seven men. We know that because they were buried with swords. And isn't it interesting how there are no swords buried in female graves? And you're like, no, but you decided that those seven graves were men because they had swords.
Okay,
So, yeah.
It's a
Yeah.
circular argument.
Very.
Okay. I think I'm getting my head around it.
I mean, this is a very conceptual thing, though, because you do. I'm doing this a lot, like in real time at the moment, just like sitting there and kind of like, I know what I think is interesting and what the material shows, but also just like, just kind of unlearning a little bit and realizing how ingrained this thinking is in us.
It is ingrained. And I had a lot of people getting very upset with me when I was like, when I was just going, but swords aren't important. And they're like, no, swords are important. I'm like, yes, okay, fine, swords are important. But so are frying pans. Let's talk about frying pans. Do you know what? Nobody is really interested in talking about frying pans from the Viking Age, which seems like an awful way.
It's they're not just as cool, are they, I guess.
They're not as
But
sexy.
so I well, it depends who's holding the frying pan. And so yeah, so anybody bear with me when I'm asking questions because a lot of this I am trying to figure out in real time. So sometimes I might mix my words up.
And I mean, that's part of the process, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is just trying to process it all kind of as I'm thinking of the question. So my next question was that kind of just came up with then. If you have this group of women who were buried with cloth and jewelry, and then like this group of men that was buried with weapons, why? I can understand. Okay, the men were buried with weapons because they were warrior. They were held in high regard. So would that
We
be
assume
true?
they were warriors because they had weapons.
Yes. Okay, but
Sorry,
no.
I
But
had to.
I was meaning as in. I could understand why they would get a more special burial because if they was held in high regard, then they would be buried with maybe important items that usually you would hold on to, like a sword, because a sword is important. You're not going to bury somebody with it, I guess, unless they really need that sword wherever they're going. So would that be the same for the I guess quote unquote like quote unquote special gendered female ones, would they be somebody who was held in high regard and that is why they're then buried with these extra goods? And
Yeah.
then would that then kind of go back to what you were saying earlier about how really it's about hierarchy? You get these two groups who are buried special because they're held in high regard, and then this whole middle ground, just unfortunately, it's just mediocre people who just kind of just think, well, the majority of people, they just existed and they just didn't get anything more special. So unfortunately, you can't identify them based on.
Yeah, so that's a really good argument, and I can't say for sure for the whole of the archaeological corpus in Norway, but in the graves that I've analysed, no, that's not the case. The ones that aren't gender specific are still really rich. They've got horses and they've got lots of fancy tools and lovely things.
Oh, okay.
So they're not poor. I think there's something else going on there.
Yeah, I wonder what really good farmers.
I mean,
Maybe
fun
oh.
caveat, the richest biologically sexed female burial that we do have, Osberg, does not have any oval brooches. We assume
No.
that they were taken during the break-in, but we don't know whether or not they were actually there to begin with.
Yeah. I don't assume they were taken during the break-in. We place a lot of faith in the jewelry sets of the Viking Age, whereas actually they're not that common in burials. Textile working tools are very common, and that's fairly self-explanatory because the Viking Age couldn't have happened without textiles. So that makes perfect sense. Oval brooches aren't that common, and we expect them, and when they aren't there, we get a little bit upset. But they're not really, they shouldn't be expected. Is the long and the short of that. But I just think we need to explore social roles that aren't tied to these very Victorian gender ideals, because that's what they are, really. When we dig up a woman, we're like, oh, she's never need jewelry, so she can't have been a proper woman. Oh, well, that doesn't sound like very 2024 reasoning to me, does it?
No. Would the everyday person have had like high quality jewelry, or would it just
No,
be?
but the graves that we have aren't everyday people. We only have 8,000 from the whole of Norway, so we're missing most of the graves.
For 300 years, 8,000 people divided by three,
Eight,
that's not a representational number-ish.
it's just not. So I could do the maths, but it would take me some time. But it's
So,
basically it would mean like a tiny population.
would that be the case that, because again, I don't know that much or anything about this stuff. Is that the case that most graves that we find are somebody who was of some importance? Are they buried in a certain way that means that we find them? Because I guess I would have just assumed that we just found pretty much a little bit of everybody, some like everyday people who maybe would just fell over and died,
Oh
or
no, I wish.
and then to like, yeah.
I wish. No, unfortunately, most of the graves that we find are very definitely wealthy people on of some scale or another. I mean, you can't compare them because some of them are Ulsberg, which is, the richest grave that we know of, and some of them are not that great, and they have, an axe and maybe a sickle and part of a cow or something. That is still a lot of wealth, sort of relatively speaking. Getting to my point here, I think one of the reasons why we don't find more burials is part of it is the terrible preservation for skeletal material in Norway. So if you weren't buried with stuff, we're not going to find you, because most of the graves we have is from people's stuff. But then another thing is Norway has a fairly unfortunate topography in the sense that only 3 to 4% is arable. And unfortunately, the arable land is also where people lived in prehistory, and where they lived is where they buried people. So an awful lot of our prehistoric archaeology is decimated by agriculture.
And that's just the way it is, kind of.
It's just the way it is, and we can't do anything about that because we have such limited space on which to grow any crops.
Gotta eat.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, I guess then how I guess how accurate, if at all, can we say about the average person living in the
All
Viking
right.
Age if everything that we go on seems to be, because if you were, I mean, I assume for the most people it's just the hustle of life, you're just having to survive. It's easy for us to sit here and have this conversation and talk about gender 1,000 years ago, or me to sit on Instagram scrolling and posting, or anything that we do with our time, just getting into Facebook argument. Like I always think, like getting into Facebook arguments is such a sign of privilege of our time, because we don't have to think about where the food's coming from, where going out and like harvesting the crop, or what, we just don't have those things, so we can spend our time. Whereas people, back then, they just didn't have that luxury. So I imagine, like, for the everyday, it was just, you just have to hustle and get on with life. So you don't have time for all these things that we maybe associate with them and think were important. They're just like, we didn't even think about that because we're trying not to starve to death.
Exactly. And I think that's a massive part of that. And when you think about, so the traditional story of the Viking Age is that women looked after everything indoors and men looked after everything else outdoors. And you're like, but that is not how a subsistence farmer could function. I mean, they would starve to death if the wife in the household just sat down and went, no, I'm so very sorry, but I can't help you harvest the crops because that's outdoors and I'm only allowed to work indoors. So
It
there's
does.
this whole level of privilege in the stories that we tell about the past that are just not compatible with having to make a living.
Yeah, it does seem very silly that you wouldn't utilize an extra pair of hands when you're really hungry because you're like, sorry, you're a woman.
Wrong realm. I mustn't go outdoors.
This isn't your job. You please just go back inside. Like I, yeah, it just wouldn't make sense. Okay, yeah, I definitely think that that would have been the case. Like everybody would share the roles and do, I guess, just muck in and get on with everyday life. But then, when it comes to, I guess, the more elites, the ones that we do have the evidence for, or let's go back to warriors. Do you think like it would have been particularly acceptable for women to become warriors? Like that role? I know that's probably
That's a big question.
not an easier question to answer.
No.
So I've had a couple of chats with Leszek
Yeah.
Gadewa about, and it's always fascinating talking to him about kind of this thing, and I love getting other people's perspective on it. And yeah, just it's just such a hot topic, isn't it?
It
Everyone
is.
seems to have an opinion on it, whether, and like there's no way to really say either way, I guess.
No, I mean, I don't have a problem being forthright, as Leszek knows as well. We don't necessarily see eye to eye on this either, but I'm like, if it looks like a female warrior and it smells like a female warrior and it's buried with weapons and it is a woman, then it probably was a female warrior. And I don't really think that's problematic. I don't think he was a social role open to many women, but I also don't think he was a social role necessarily open to all men. So
Okay,
you need
yeah.
to qualify the questions that you're asking in terms of how many people could really inhabit that role. We don't have an awful lot of female warrior burials. We do have some. We have enough for it to not be unknown. And we also have plenty of other sources that testify to this being something that people knew and accepted. I don't think it was as common for women as for men, but I definitely don't think it was an impossibility.
Yeah, I think that was a fascinating point because I don't think this is controversial, but not all people are made equal, and that might upset some people, but it is what it is. So like there's certain things that I can't do because physiologically that I'm just not I'm never gonna be a basketball player in the NBA. I'm 5 foot 10 and I can't jump very high, so that's just not a path for me to go down. So I think that's fascinating because kind of going back to what we said before about the farms, do you think there would be any care if you had a female warrior who was really good and then you had like a male warrior who just wasn't that good? Because there will have been some that weren't that good. Do you think there would ever be like, oh, well, I'm not fighting with you because you're a woman? Or surely it's like you fight with the best.
Yeah, I think so. Again, it's just pragmatic, isn't it? Because you're in a life or death situation, you're not going to really worry about the gender of the person. You're going to worry about whether or not they'll stop you getting killed. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
I know what I would do, basically. But it is a very complicated question, in many ways. But I just think we've got too much evidence to say otherwise. There's no reason to suppose that women couldn't be warriors. There is also no reason to suppose that they could be warriors as often as men could, but that's a whole different story.
I mean, I guess that ties into the shield maiden question
Yeah.
from earlier.
Yes, shield maidens.
Because
Do you
I
know
mean
what it?
that no, go ahead, Marilyn.
No, I was just going to say that it's not actually a new thing. People have been obsessed with shield maidens for as long as Viking studies have been a thing. So it's about 200 years of history of people really wanting shield maidens or really not wanting shield maidens or thinking they are just mythological creations or thinking they're based in reality. And we still haven't gotten any closer to any sort of agreement.
Do you think that's also what brings the fascination to it? Because it is such an open topic. I often say this with I guess, the Viking Age in general. I think it always sticks around in popularity and always kind of has this cycle of just coming back into popular culture because there is just so much open end that people can apply it to their own lives. People can kind of look at it and really identify with it and kind of become, part of it. And I think that is the joy of it because it is so malleable and interpretable to kind of interpretable. Yeah, maybe. Is that a word? Into yourself. So you think that is the same thing with human? Because there is no answer that it's just this never ending cycle.
Yeah, no, I think I think that's, yeah, you've got a very good point there. It's part of the attraction that the past holds, and especially the Vikings, because they are close enough to feel familiar, but far enough away so that we can project pretty much any fantasy onto them. And that creates a very interesting sort of fantasy realm, doesn't it? And there's a lot that could be said about that. But yes, I think that's definitely something to do with that.
What about like I guess female figures in mythology? I don't know if that's your area as such, or is it more just archaeological,
Yeah,
like?
I do sometimes refer to written sources, but I like to refer to what other people have written about written sources because I'm not that great with them.
It was just because obviously there are some quite important figures, female, and I wondered how that maybe whether we can take from that and look at how what society would be like because of how female figures were portrayed in
Yeah, no, I think you
mythology.
definitely can do that. And I think it reveals something quite different from, for instance, later Christianity. So there's a whole different way of seeing the world. And if you look at like the Norse creation myths, then they're not hostile to women in the same way as the Christian creation myth is, for instance. And I think that again tells you something about how society was understood, but also how gender roles was understood. So yes, I do think there's a lot there, but it isn't my strength. So I might be talking myself into a corner, but I don't think so.
Also, Margaret, if you have anything to ask, please jump in. I feel like
I
I've
mean,
just.
I was just when we were on the topic of like warriors and shield maidens, kind of going back to our earlier talk about, how likely the 1830s started the whole interpretation of binary genders and sex in the Viking Age. I'm curious, and I mean, I'm just spitballing here. But I'm curious also, since you said money on that, that fascination with shield maidens have been around since as long as Viking studies have been around. I do wonder if shield maidens. Okay, it's a two-part thing. This is just me
It's
speculating.
tough, isn't it?
It is, because it's like so much going on in my head at the same time. I do wonder if the fascination with shield maidens has started out because it has been seen as such a bananas concept compared to what was currently going on the time when Viking Age studies started and have kind of persisted that way since. And I also do wonder if it's been sustained by the fact that the Viking Age as a concept has been abused by a lot of right-wing, very white supremacist, strict conservative movements that project very what we would call traditional, but I wouldn't even call it traditional. I would call it like just kind of insane binary gender roles. And so shield maidens kind of become the symbol of fighting that a bit. I don't know whether or not there's any proof in what I'm saying, but I'm just kind of spitballing.
That's really interesting. I don't know either, but I'd love for somebody to do some research on it because I think there are some very unhealthy strains of how people relate to the Viking Age, and then there's a lot of sort of reactions against that, which also create and sustain a lot of the focus. I think certainly 19th century fascination with shield maidens, I think it's fair to say there was a bit of exoticism in that, yes. Some of them were fairly straightforward though. So it's really interesting that one of the burials in Norway that has been osteologically assessed as female, Nordre Kjølen, she was excavated, or they, because we don't actually know, even though archaeological sex estimation isn't actually all that accurate. They were excavated in 1901, and the excavator Gustav Mörk wrote just completely matter-of-factly, like, "Here's a shield maiden. You can see because it is a woman, she has weapons, full stop." No hoo-hahs, no big debates. Everybody was just like, "Yeah, okay, that's a shield maiden. Isn't that lovely? End of story." And you fast forward to 2017, and there is a big hoo-ha. So I think there is, I think the way that we talk about shield maidens can teach us a lot about the society that we live in.
In what way?
I don't know. So back in 1901, gender roles weren't in flux. And I think in a way they were fine with there being shield maidens in the Viking Age because that wasn't a threat to the social order of the time. But now we are experiencing a lot of change in how people perceive and talk and experience gender. And that, I think, reflects into academic debates, which become very polarized and very problematic very soon. And I wonder if some at some level there isn't sort of a feeling of established knowledge systems under threat, and that might play into the reactions that have come against that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I have not actually researched this specifically, so I should probably not talk too much, or I
I mean,
might
I
upset.
haven't researched it either, but I'm familiar with the feeling of the established knowledge system seemingly being feeling threatened.
Yeah, because I guess in 1901, that would not have been the case. I mean, women were women, men were men. There wasn't anything in between. There was no academics had to feel threatened by that knowledge when it came up. Whereas now, I think people do feel threatened, and you have to ask why. And yeah.
I guess I've only really been in all of this world, whatever you want to call it, maybe 10, 9 years, but really into it like 5 years. And that's around sort of the time of like there's been this rapid change in the world. There's been a lot of like a huge sort of feminist movement, I guess that's the right term for it. I don't know. And do you think that whilst that's kind of happening, there is this historical figure of shield maidens strong? I mean, the Vikings are fucking cool to anybody. They're just cool out there. So then when you get like the strong female figure in that, is that then really from a female perspective, like really, it's like this figure you can kind of look at that's very just all empowering in this amongst this really cool time period. Anyway, so you can kind of just get behind it very easy. Does that make
I don't
sense?
really know. I think it's complicated. I overuse that word quite a lot, but
True though.
it is
It
complicated.
is
I
the
think there
tagline
probably
of the
is something in
podcast,
that,
so
but
don't worry.
also I think that you're straying into the do people like shield maidens because they want women in the past to have been strong? And I'm like, yes, but there were shield maidens, so it's not a case of wanting. It's a case of talking about stuff that we haven't been able to talk about before because it's been shut down. So BJ581, it was sociologically assessed in the 1970s. People have known it was a woman for quite some time. But it took a DNA analysis and an internationally peer-reviewed article to get people talking.
Is that because the
I don't actually know why it wasn't published earlier, but I'm guessing there's something to do with reception, maybe.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to ask is
Yeah.
whether it was down to the people who were going would publish it just kind of dragging their heels because it's maybe not in line with what they think. I don't know how that all works and whether that's even
Wouldn't like to speculate, to be honest, but
I feel like that's it. I wouldn't like to speculate on air and so
yeah.
but I guess the question before was I mean does it even really matter whether there was shield maidens historically to modern day women? Is it like just this really kind of cool iconic figure that just holds its own thing in modern culture that's just become this really kind of symbol of symbol of power, I guess, to people who are interested in this, and just that really
Yeah, I think.
badass female figure. And obviously, I imagine that the TV show Vikings and the lag of the figure really helped of like this, just this badass female character that you don't get. You're seeing more in popular culture now, but you don't, you know, it certainly when I was a kid, there wasn't that many apart from
Buffy.
but yeah, Buffy was one. Sarah Connor was the best, though.
Yeah,
She
no,
was
Buffy.
Sarah Connor, and then Sigourney Weaver and Alien, like
Oh,
Ridley, and
yeah,
Aliens.
that's
Like
fine.
she was a badass.
Yeah, no, I don't know, actually. I mean, it's very, you're straying into things that, you know, I could talk for hours, and we'd be moving very far from Nordic mythology.
We have. I'm sorry. We do that. We do
Yeah, good.
that.
So this is what I told you earlier today, Money on the Moon, just Okay.
organic.
Very good. So I mean, yes, there is something to be said for that, but then you're into the whole, do women have to be like men for us to take them seriously? And obviously
Okay,
they
right, yeah.
shouldn't have to. And so I'm guilty of it as well. I scoff at traditional knowledge production of the Viking Age, which puts women in the kitchen. I'm like, oh my God, women did more than just cook and clean. But then actually that is true. They did do more than cooking and cleaning, but cooking and cleaning are vital, vitally important things without which society can't function. So it's also something about our presentist gaze that refuses to acknowledge the importance of maintenance activities, where we're like, we can only take a woman seriously. She's buried with a sword because a cooking pot to us doesn't tell us anything about power. But actually, I think cooking pots in the Viking Age were very powerful, and that's something that we need to address. But I'm as guilty of this as the next person. I get really excited when women are found with weapons. I love it, I really
Of
do.
course.
But I wish I could get just as excited about cooking pots, and I'm going to work on that. Yes, I think, you know, what we're doing here is, again, telling very partial stories where we are only taking people in the past seriously when they conform to our ideas of power. And our ideas of power are very closely bound up with violence, which is problematic.
But do you think that excitement comes from when women have found weapons? It's almost like a, these are my words, not yours, a kind of like fuck you to the man, as in
Oh
like
yeah,
a, of
totally.
like, yeah, they're like, this is something that was seemingly like suppressed and didn't get put out there. So it's that opportunity, whereas like if you find a woman with a cooking pot, it's like, oh well, yeah, that's not as like kind of. So yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting excited
No,
by.
I mean, there is certainly a fair bit of that, and there's also a lifetime of getting annoyed with people telling me what to do. So, you know,
Yeah,
it's like nobody will
I
tell
love
this
that.
Viking woman what to do.
I
That is
get
very busy.
that. Because I'd get excited if we found a man with a cooking pot. Have we done that? Is that a
Oh yeah,
thing?
many. Many
I
women with
love
cooking pots.
cooking.
Actually, cooking kitchen equipment is as common in male Viking Age graves as it is in female.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. See? Okay, I have two questions left. Margaret, do you have any? I feel like I've completely overtalked this episode. I'm so sorry, but
You haven't overtalked me at all. I'm just enjoying this conversation. Just
Okay,
having
good.
so much fun. I don't have any questions off the top of my head. But if I think of
Okay.
any, I'll let you know.
I have two, and then obviously we will do our little Q&A after. One silly, one might be quite long. So we'll go with a silly one first. Do we have any female burials with weapons that have like those little chainmail bikinis that we see so often? Is that like a thing? Do we know where that comes from?
You just asked
Yeah,
my question, Dan.
I
No,
asked
we really do. We have tons of them, but you know what? We chose not to
it.
publicize them so that people won't get too excited.
That's just a modern thing, is it? That's
It's just as common as horned helmets, actually.
So,
okay.
to my knowledge, there is only one chainmail found from a Viking Age burial at all, and I could be wrong, but I only know of the one, and that is a very famous Jadmundur burial where the only known Viking helmet was found as well. So
Yeah,
they add
from
all the
Norway,
stuff
Viking helmet from Norway.
from Norway. And really interestingly, I'm just going to say this before you get to ask your next question. So that is a gendered male grave, but it was buried in a long mound, and long mounds are traditionally associated with women. I'm not saying it was a woman, but I'm saying that it's something we should be discussing.
Wonderful. Ambiguity, da 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 da. Exactly.
Okay, so my takeaway from that was that all the bikinis were made from leather, so that we
Yes,
just didn't
they
find
were.
them.
Yes. And then they had little nipple tassels. Of course.
Okay. Okay, yeah,
Yeah,
with
I mean, I
it.
think that's what those shield bosses actually are. They're just kind of like
Oh,
burlesque
yeah.
that were just attached with leather straps. I mean,
Yes. Because you know there are shields found in female graves, but we've only found the shield bosses, and now we know why. Thank you.
There we go, yeah. Okay, my last one, which it could be a long one, but we didn't even get to talk about the Osseberg women. You're gonna have to come back and talk to us again in the future. This
Absolutely.
has been a lot of fun. What do you think the average experience of a woman in the Viking Age would be? Because we mentioned before about how there is this, I feel like, a romanticized version of it, that it was like very equal down the middle. The women were held kind of like with the same rights as men, and it was just like this utopian society. And I've always wondered like how true that is. How
Not very.
okay, can we expand?
No, again, when it comes back to status. So, like, what's an average woman? And the
Okay.
problem is that the stories we tell are based on those elite graves that we have. So, we only know the stories from the people who made written sources or who have lasting monuments built after their death. And those are not the average people. I think if you're talking about an average woman living in a partnership on a farm with an extended family and lots of children, it was probably quite hard. And also, I think one thing that we tend to disregard in this world of, Zoom and podcasts and TV, I was thinking about it the other day. It must have been really dull.
Oh yeah.
Think of the hours of boredom.
Oh.
How
How dark
they,
it was.
yes. And so they told stories and they sat around the fire, but I mean, that just sounds very, very grim.
You think they got bored the same way we did though? Because I
No
so
wonder they started carving shit,
no,
cleaning
exactly.
shit.
What are you gonna do?
So I went on holiday with my wife at the time up to in is it Till? Tin? Till? In Oslo, in Norway. A tin, is it tin? It's just about an hour and a half up from Oslo. I think it's called Tin, the little place. I didn't make this up.
No, no.
And I definitely went there anyway. What the place was called
It's a
might
real
be,
place, I promise.
I'm just gonna try and
Okay.
check it now and see if I'm.
Was it boring? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, Tin municipality.
Okay.
It's in Telemark
Oh,
County,
yeah. Is it with
currently.
two N's?
Two N's, yes.
Ah.
So we went up there, and I thought it would be really sweet for us to get like a cabin up in the mountain. It was only for one night as well, because we stayed in Oslo. But went up there for one night, and there was no electricity. The toilet was like outside in an outhouse. There was no running water. The water was like just little containers that were in there. I was like, this will be really sweet and romantic.
Hashtag authentic.
We like it was lovely, but it was also, I think it was like February,
Oh.
so it got
Oh.
dark really early.
Wow.
And we were like, oh, let's light these candles. They're not very practical for seeing. So we
Fair
just
enough.
like, I think we like just got into bed at like 8 o'clock and watched stuff on the iPad. Oh, how very modern of us. And I was like, wow, this really like sweet romantic thing just turned into complete boredom.
Actually, that sounds pretty good. Going to sleep at 8 o'clock. Should do that more often. Yeah, I think you underestimate that. But then also, I have a lot of things that I have a lot of agendas. One of the things that I'd really like is to introduce an archaeology of boring. So I do think that we exoticize the past and we tell these stories about how great it was. But
No,
at the end of the
what?
day, people went to bed. And then they slept or they didn't. And maybe if they were a woman of a certain age, they had hot flashes and they had to get up in the night. And then what if you had to get up in the night and go to the toilet? But anyway, that's by the way. Point being, they went to sleep, they got up in the morning, they had a little wash, they made some food, they did their chores. I think the majority of existence was pretty routine and probably quite dull in many ways. Yeah, so I want to do an archaeology of everyday boring stuff where you emphasize things like the routine stuff that people did.
Yeah,
Times, yeah.
that just doesn't get made into TV shows, does it? It's just
No, it
not.
doesn't. It really doesn't. It's not the jazz hands, look at this amazing burial and isn't it funky? It's just, no, it'd be really dull. And I don't know what they used for toilet paper, but we should find out.
But at the same time, wouldn't that, if that research did exist, wouldn't that then make such TV shows that much more accurate if the little dull stuff in between the dialogue sequences, it's,
Oh, and all
they
the
did
boring
stuff.
conversations. Just think of your day, and I don't know, maybe this is just me, but I would say about 95% of my conversations are deathly dull, even to myself. So imagine what it's like to people listening. It must be horrible.
Yeah,
I don't know what you
definitely.
mean. My conversations with my dog are extremely intelligent at all times.
Dogs exempt.
Yeah, mine's just shouting at Rocco, so
Yeah, but
he's so sleepy, bless him. I'm sure he'll jump up on my knee in the second part. Yeah, okay, let's wrap this up, and then we will
yeah, sorry.
let people ask you some questions in the
Oh no, this is a
Q&A.
weekly occurrence, my own. Happens time to time.
So yeah, we'll wrap up, let people ask some questions, and I would love for you to come back in the future.
I would love to.
I've enjoyed this a lot.
This was so much fun. And I also just wanted to ask one question that's kind of like a wrap-up question. If you could, how would you summarize how we deal with gender in the Viking Age?
Yes.
Sorry.
No. So this is a long and convoluted explanation. I have a toy. It's called a boppet. Do you know what a boppet is?
Yeah, I'm a
No, it's
kid from
like a
89.
bobblehead. No, it's a
No.
handheld game that you and it has little
Bop
controls that
it.
you need to bop
Twist
it,
it.
twist it, pull it,
Yeah.
and
All
you
right.
get points for how long you carry on. And if you don't do very flick it, see somebody commenting. If you don't do very well, mine shouts at me and goes, "Do it the same, but better." And yeah, that's what I've got to say about gender in the Viking Age. That's
Nice. I did not expect that answer. So, and answers like that are exactly why you're welcome back at any
Amazing.
point. it's been a lot of fun. It's always nice when we get somebody who, this is no shade to any guest in the past, please don't take it that way, but who has the scholarly intellect, but also is very chatty, and not all scholars are.
No. Not all
So
scholars are created equal.
that's very true.
Some of them are much better scholars than I am, but I am happy to talk shit. So,
There you
they're not,
go.
this
Well,
was,
it's
we need us too.
yeah, you need people
This has
with
been great fun.
personalities and opinions. They make the world more fun.
Very good.
So yeah, we've been lucky. Most scholars are very chatty, and they're fun. But there has been some in the past that I've struggled with. But I
And
will
you're
never.
going off on a tangent now again, just so you know, in case you were thinking about closing off the
I know, I'm getting myself in trouble as well.
episode.
Okay, yeah. Okay, let's wrap it up, and we'll let people ask some questions. Marion, do you have anything that you want to point people towards? Any sort of public
Social media
persona, I guess?
channels and
Social
academia, like
media.
if. Are there any places that you want people to go to if they want to, like, if they're curious about your work or what you do?
Oh,
Much better put. Thank you.
I've got an academia page. It's not very up to date, but most of my stuff is on there. But there's lots of great stuff coming out on different ways of thinking about the past at the moment. But off the top of my head, I think I won't bombard people with long academic references, and I'm not good with like social media.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Perfect. No.
One last question. When is that gender encyclopedia book that I know that you've been working on coming out?
Oh, right. We have
Along
two. We
with.
have Gendering the Nordic Past that should be out this summer. And then there's a handbook of gender archaeology coming out. But that will be less
Okay.
Viking and more general. Gendering the
No,
Nordic Past
important.
is quite Viking. That's coming out on Breckwalls later on this year.
Okay, well, let's schedule in for you to come back when that comes out.
Very good.
There you
And
see.
also happy to chit chat about sacrifice.
Oh yeah, we do. I don't know why. I don't know why this came to mind. Then I was like, "You'll be a fun person to talk about sacrifice with." And I'm like,
No, but for real
"Yeah, I feel like you'll just be a fun person to do that with."
though.
So let's yeah let let's definitely do that. I'll speak with Bob and or who booked this one? Was it? I'm going off again. We
It
could talk about
was
this off air.
it was Bob and me. I pitched it
Okay.
to Bob, and then Bob reached out.
Okay, yeah, we will definitely do sacrifice because that is one that fascinates me. And it probably does tie into this because there is some mistreatment of women in there as well.
Oh, there is, but then
Yeah.
there's, oh no, I won't stop because then we'll
Let's
be
not
here all
spoil it.
night.
No,
But
let's not spoil it.
no.
Okay,
We'll
Margaret,
keep
where
that
can
for the
people.
Patreon only section.
Yeah. So there you go. Get over to the Patreon. Patreon forward slash Nordic Mythology Podcast, please. Margaret, where can people find you?
Instagram as usual, ArchaeoMags, Archaeo with a K.
Perfect. And then for me, it's Daniel and Scott Farrand one or at Horns of Odin, and then just Nordic Mythology Podcast on all the different platforms. If you'd like to see all our pretty faces, it's on the YouTube. Yeah, it adds a little bit to it, I think, when you can see us. So do go and check that out and hit the little bell and subscribe button and all that stuff. But yeah, thank you very, very much, Marianne. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, let's let people ask you some questions.